the pieces and go home. Well, did you make it cry, make it break down, and shatter your illusions of love? And is it over now? Do you know how to pick up the pieces and go
Hello and welcome to Skeleton Shelter. How's everybody doing tonight? Good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm talking to you. I like your vibe there with the candle. I can't see what it says though. What kind of candle it is?
It's Divino Niño Jesus.
It's very nice.
Divine Baby Jesus.
Yeah.
I just like the design.
I believe there's something on the side of it that tells you like what it protects you from or something. I don't remember what that one is particularly. But I think it might say something.
I speak about as much Spanish as like the entrance of the second Jane's Addiction album, which is what it looks like. That's why I bought it.
Yes,
señores,
yes.
Señoras y señoras, nosotros
Juanas.
I can't do it with the echo.
Yes, it's Juanas Addiction.
Juanas Addiction.
All right. Well,
we're doing well.
Awesome. So welcome everyone to Skeleton Shelter. Today is August the 1st, which we should have opened the show with just saying rabbit, rabbit, because that is what I always say on the first day of the month for good luck. So rabbit, rabbit to everyone out there. I know people say different versions of it. So some people say white rabbit, rabbit, but I just say rabbit, rabbit. Today we have a different sort of show. Not really all that different. We're talking about the same things that we normally talk about, abuse and narcissistic personality disorder, emotional abuse, and the survivors and thrivers who have gotten themselves through it. And their stories are told so that we can help the people who are not out of it yet, the people who are still struggling, who don't know, hey, is that abusive? Is that something that's a red flag that maybe I should leave? Because sometimes people are so turned around, especially if something is not physically violent, that they're not really sure what's going on. And they need reassurance from people who have been through those sorts of emotional abuse and I call them brainwashing abuses because you literally lose yourself and lose your sense of self within those abuses to know that they're not alone and to realize, you know, when it's time to go, red flags and all. So today we have a guest on our show. His name is Mr. C. He'll be coming in a minute. He's asked to be anonymous today because like many people who deal with domestic violence, it is not super safe to talk about it. And sometimes we still have to deal with our abusers, especially if there's different things involved. So I'm first going to give you just some information because people don't really talk that much about male domestic violence. A lot of times we talk about mostly female domestic violence and how to escape. And it's a little bit different because I think that a lot of times men deal with people thinking that possibly they are the ones that are being abusive. And it's easy for a partner who is a woman to maybe hide behind that because statistically speaking, most victims are female. So right now I am on the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC page for intimate partner violence, sexual violence, and stalking among men. And it says that across the United States, nearly a quarter of men reported some form of contact sexual violence in their lifetime. Approximately 1 in 10, men in the U.S. experienced contact sexual violence, physical violence, and/or stalking by an intimate partner during their lifetime and reported some sort of IPV-related impact. Commonly reported IPV-related impacts among male victims were fear, concern for safety, and symptoms of PTSD, among others. Okay, so about 1 in 3 men have experienced contact sexual violence, physical violence, and/or stalking by an intimate partner during their lifetime. And nearly 56% of men who are victims of contact sexual violence, physical violence, and/or stalking by an intimate partner first experienced these or other forms of violence by their partner before age 25. When it comes to sexual violence, nearly 1 in 4 men in the United States have experienced some form of contact sexual violence in their lifetime. 1 in 14 men were made to penetrate someone during their lifetime. 1 to 38 men in the U.S. experienced or completed or attempted rape victimization. Among male victims of completed or attempted rape, about 71% first experienced such victimization prior to age 25. Now, I'm talking about that because rape is not, and sexual violence is not always involved in domestic violence for men, but it is involved in sexual violence for men. And we're talking about, domestic violence, and many times sexual violence goes hand in hand, a lot more so when it's females. But I also wanted to give those statistics. When it comes to stalking, about 1 in 17 men in the U.S. have been victims of stalking at some point in their lifetime. And nearly 41% of male victims have first experienced stalking before the age of 25. So it's not only women, it's also men. They go through the same sort of things. And then when we look up male survivors of narcissistic abuse, which I also looked up, it basically talks about the fact that men can also be subject to coercive control, and coercive control, is getting people to do things under the threat of maybe not seeing your children again, of, financial disability, like taking away your money or taking your money or not giving you money, all sorts of things like that, where gaslighting is rampant and everything else, which is, pretty much the main subject here of our podcast. So let's go on to our guest, Mr. C. How are you doing tonight?
Very well. How are you?
Good. Why don't you give us some background of yourself? And you don't have to give too many details that, would lead to you not being anonymous. But I mean, how old are you? Like, do you have kids? Stuff like that.
So I am 44, soon to be 45. I'm a welder. I'll tell that much. Welder fabricator for a corporate business on the East Coast. So I definitely went through some craziness in my life. I don't know where to begin. It's tough. But my story is a long one, but I'm going to have to sum it up. So I have 5 kids, technically. I married into 2 way back when. I've been divorced about 6-7 years now. So, it was pretty tough. So I'll just get right into it. Was married. It was good at first. Kind of was controlling right off the bat because I felt like I had to be forced into marriage. It wasn't really a mutual agreement. It was either do this or I won't do this. So I was actually kicked out of the home that I was living with this female with. And then I re-entered myself after she was pregnant because we didn't get married, before. We just did everything wrong. We didn't do anything the normal way. So I was raised Catholic, so it was very crazy to do that. Just get into kids and not marriage. And my household was very Catholic back in the day. So I tried to do everything right, but it just fell apart. So she was pregnant with twins and she didn't really talk to me the whole time. I never knew why. And then I re-entered her life on my own, towards the end of the pregnancy. And actually, right off the bat, she was going to give up the babies. And I was like, you might want to think about this. And I was like, why do you want to do this? I just guess she didn't really tell me the whole story, but she couldn't handle the pressure. She had already had 2 kids. So I was dating her with 2 kids. 1 was 8, 1 was 1. So then we were about to have twins. First, I thought she was just pregnant, but she actually informed me it was twins. So I was like, oh, my goodness, there's going to be 4 kids. And, she had the babies and I convinced her, don't give them up. We can do this. So, she saw that I could handle all the kids. It's very tough kids, young ages, first an 8-year-old, then a 1-year-old and then twins. So it was literally, I was like He-Man carrying babies around. And, I don't know. I think just right off the bat was controlling. Like I saw things coming. Like her family was very Christian and kind of like alienated me, because I think they judged me as somebody that wasn't going to, first off the bat, they judged me as somebody that wasn't going to take care of my kids because I am of African-American, you know, like they just stereotyped me and judged me right away that I wasn't going to take care of my kids, but I always did. I always worked young and stuck with my job for the most part. So I kind of had to like convince them and show that whole family that I was going to be powerful enough to take care of my kids and establish a financial background that would support a family that big. So right off the bat, that was tough for me. And like, I felt like I was just being stomped on because of the background, religious background that I came from. They were like, you're not this way. You don't do things right. The whole way you think is wrong. So I'm just like, okay. I'm like, so after the twins were born, we decided like we were going to get married. And then it was like, you have to convert your whole life and the way you think to become accepted in our family and to make this work and to raise your kids. So right there, I was like already, I think I started seeing a therapist through the church, and it was like the pastor, but he was a therapist. So I was just like, we always argued just because I was like, I'm Catholic and no shit, I want you to be this way so we can be a family. And I'm just like, this is nuts. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what to do. So then just years and years went on. I worked very hard. I worked second shift, and I took care of the kids constantly and just dumped my money. We agreed, like, you take care of the finances, I'll just go to work, I'll dump money in. I barely ever saw the kids, but it was like, it worked out because just their age, like I could get them on the bus and then like 11 o'clock or whatever they had to do, nursery bus, whatever they had to do, I could just do it, you know, like comfortably and still go to work and manage when I come home. But, and she never worked the whole time. It was, you know, she just wanted to be an at-home mom. So I was like, okay, I'm fine with that. But like, I was never in control of any of the finances. I never bought any clothes for myself, like very little materialistic things. I just always thought that like kids come first. I don't care about anything. But it was just nuts. Like she was using credit cards that I had. I had very good financial credit. And like behind my back, she was maxing them out. But for stuff that we needed, but I just, as a couple, you would think that you would tell the other person, this is what I'm doing and why, you know, but it just never worked out that way. So I'm going to skip some things, but to make a long story short, this went on and on and on, and it just never changed. Like I went from one religion to the other, and then it was just craziness, like always being abused, always being controlled. I got quiet. I got depressed. Very little to say all the time. I still have to deal with the abuser. Every day I see her. Like, my kids are older. It's getting easier just because they're getting older. But, we ended up having a horrible divorce. It took me a long time to recover because now she's controlling. She's still, you know, follows the Christian beliefs. And I really don't have a say of, like, for instance, to bring up like COVID, you know, like some of my kids are pro get the shot, and she won't let them just because her religion, I guess the way they think is they don't need the shot. That, I mean, even though my kids want it, like I don't have the right to just take my kid to the doctor and get that shot. That's how I feel. I probably do have the right, but like she makes it impossible to believe that I can bring them, and I'm like, she'll automatically say I'm doing something evil, you know, like, why would you poison your kids? And I'm like, I would never poison my kids. Like, I every time they go to the doctors or whatever, I take them, like earache, you know, anything that goes on with them, I take them. Like she just doesn't even bring them anywhere. I'm just like, you actually still don't have a job to this day. I mean, this is many years later, and you sit home all the time, but you won't take them anywhere. Like it's at the point where I used to just leave work. My job was at risk because something would happen to one of the kids, I would leave. You know, I would have to make up an excuse to my boss and just be like, I got to go and do this because my kids are sick and I don't know how they're going to get well until I come do this. Like, I didn't have any stable or, you know, like, I didn't have faith that she would even bring them to take care of them, you know, just because she was so persistent on doing what she wanted all the time. Like, she wanted to stay home and not take them, she would do it. And I'm just like, I have to bring my kids there. So I would leave, take them, they would be well, and then she wouldn't even, you know, no recognition that, you know, you did that, thank you. It was just expected. And, you know, that hurts. Like, you know, still to this day, like, I feel like I can't take my kids for something they need, or I have to get approval to do it, because the control that she forced upon me was like, Jesus, you know, like, if I don't do it, maybe I look like the jerk. I don't know. Like, it just, it's an awful feeling. And I've talked to therapists and, you know, they help to an extent, but I think that abuse and that type of narcissism stays within you forever. Like, it never really leaves. And you always feel some sort of control and some fear that you're not doing things right. You know, like, even this show, like, I had to go drop my kids off before the show. And I was like, I have to ask permission to drop them off early just so I can be on time for this show. You know what I mean? So I don't know how you guys are feeling or if that falls into the category of what we're talking about here tonight, but
yes,
you can chime in anytime.
Everybody's got a different story. I mean, nobody's story is going to be the same, but everybody's story has the similar cycle going on. And I posted up a link. I just gave over to Joe with physical violence. And so basically this is like the cycle of abuse, right? Which is like using coercion and threats, which is making and or carrying out threats to do something to hurt him or her, threaten to leave him or her, right? To report him or her to welfare or make them drop charges or make them do things that you want them to do, right? Then there's also using intimidation, using emotional abuse, which is putting the person down, making the person feel bad about themselves, calling them names, making them think that they're crazy, playing mind games, you know, humiliating people, using isolation, which of course that's when people stop listening to you and stop really thinking that you're telling the truth, right? Controlling what he or she does, who he or she sees and talks to, what they read, where they go, in your case, what kind of religion you are, minimizing, denying, and blaming. So making light of the abuse and not taking your concerns about it seriously, saying abuse didn't happen. And the hardest thing is when the abuse is not physical, because people are just like, oh, well, this person's acting crazy because I asked them to do something and they're having this like huge reaction to it. But it's because of so many things. I mean, and economic abuse is in there as well. And for you, yes, maybe it was for things that you needed, but sometimes we need things and we can't budget them yet. Right. So... and if you're buying them and you're putting them on someone else's card so that they don't have any money left, then that, what does that do for you? Then you now don't have any money to take care of yourself day to day.
Well, no, so. It was kind of, not that I wanted money to spend for myself. It was more like when something would come up like a bill, I'd be like, well, where did that money go? You know, and she would never have an answer, you know what I mean? Like, I would just be like, well, then I don't know how I'm going to pay that bill, or I'm going to have to work X amount of hours overtime in order to achieve to pay this bill. You know, like in, you know, when the divorce was like final, it was just crazy because I didn't even run up half of that stuff. And, you know, my name was on the card, so I ended up, you know, paying for it. I don't really care, you know, how money, like money is the last open thing in my mind ever. Dealing with any situation, to me, it's just materialistic. And I try to work around worrying, stressing out about things. You know, it takes a lot for me to stress out about things, but I do. I do stress out, and I do feel used to confess. You know, the worst thing that I think through narcissism is when the kids are manipulated, because they're the ones that suffer even greater than adults. You know, when someone starts using kids, your own kids against you, it's very hurtful. And, you know, for any parent, I don't know how many parents are out there listening, but it's hurtful. And you definitely need therapy for the kids and for yourself in order to come together and work against narcissism, because it affects everybody. It's not just one person. It affects everybody you have in your life and everyone surrounding your life that you have to associate with every day, you know?
Yes, because it's kind of like everybody is held hostage to this person that just goes at their whim whenever they want to. So even though you're supposed to be somewhere, now this person wants this to happen, right? So that's just, I'm saying something small, right? And then that means the kids have to leave a birthday party early. And then the person that you went there to see is like upset with you because you brought your kids home early. And then like all these little things happen behind, which mean nothing to most people. But when you deal with it every single time that you go somewhere, every single time you deal with someone, that is abusive. It's like they're trying to change you by punishing you every turn that you make. And I don't know, because I'm not sure of your story, but a lot of times they ruin holidays. Do you deal with that a lot, where holidays all of a sudden something changes or something, you know, happens?
Well, on that part of it, like, we were on a set schedule, but I feel like every time that I try to change a schedule, it's a hassle. You know, it shouldn't be, because I was always willing to work on, compromise. I always was able to compromise when we divorced, and still to this day, if it has to deal with her family or something of hers, it's like, don't mess with my personal situations, you know, like, I'm like, sorry, you know, like, sometimes you have to compromise. You just like, I have to give up something, you have to give up something. It's that's what a compromise is. And I don't think that there's any compromising with a narcissistic person that has a personality like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just my way or no way. And if you don't like it, I'm going to make you suffer somehow. You know, like, I felt, you just digging a knife in and you're finding ways to hurt me. And this person, you know, had, as I said, I'm a step parent, and I've taken care of a child age 8 and 1, and their father has never been in their life. And it was hurtful to see that. So I wanted to make their lives just as good as my biological kids. And it was crazy to see the difference between a loving step parent versus somebody that does not give a excuse my language shit about their kids. And now that those kids are grown up, one's 24, one's 18, he's coming in their life. Like, he wants to be in her life because the work is done. You know what I mean? I don't know if you can understand that, but like, I pretty much raised them from diapers to, you know, now they're college, and one was living across the world, you know? And it's like, they're understanding as adults and soon to be adult that this was the father and this was not the father. And it was hard for me to, like, she was controlling me, but anything that guy, like, it's almost like she never even kind of loved me throughout the marriage, because everything that guy did was okay. You know, like, this is okay, this is okay. It's he's not paying child support, that's okay. And I'm like, why? Why do you have so much compassion for this man, but you have very little? I'm the man you're married to. You have no compassion for me at all. I think this was another part of narcissism. It's like, well, I can, because you're not going to control me. I'm going to control you. And I will feel any way I want to feel about any man. I'm like, it was just hard for me to fathom why I was being looked at like dirt, and this guy was still put up on a pedestal, even though I was the one doing all the work. And, you know, it's a vicious cycle of continuous hurt. And like I said, the ones that get hurt the most is, like, I can see it now, because I've been to therapy, the kids have been to therapy, and I can see their pain and what they go through and the emotional roller coasters that they're dealing with me being their number one role model. And then they have to allow, because I never said that they could never see their biological father. That's not the kind of person I am. I would never do that to somebody where, you know, I would split that. If you want a relationship with your biological father, even though I raised you, you know, you have that right. And now it's like they're kind of torn, because they're being hurt all over again. Like, it's like I saw them hurt young, and they're being hurt all over again because they're seeing he still to this day does not want a full part of their life. And to me, a person that loves their children, a mother would step in and stop that hurt. But if you're hurting somebody the same way, you know, like, why would you stop it? That's how I look at it, you know. You know, like, you supposedly love me, you supposedly love your kids, but like, maybe you thrive on hurting, you know what I mean, and abusing.
Now, do you feel like as a man that it's been hard to talk to people about what you've gone through? Like, I want to also talk a little bit about that, about, you know, what is it like as a guy trying to explain to people, like, this is what's happening to me. I know we briefly, when we talked before the podcast, you were telling me that you thought that guys really needed to have a place that they could talk to each other, because in the world, at least, I guess, of abuse and things like that, women have found ways to make places online to talk to each other and places to go. And there are places where you can go to shelters a lot easier as a woman than it is for a man. I was reading about how there were like only 10 beds in all of England at one point for any guy that needed to go somewhere. So what has that been like for you?
It's definitely hard to talk to men about it, because they're one thing going through it. I learned through therapists and stuff, you have to emotionally evolve as a man and find your soft spot. I mean, you know, like, you have to be able to think beyond the prideful macho-ness. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of guys at my job are narcissistic. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I work with a lot of men, and, you know, just probably 70% of them are narcissistic. So sometimes it's difficult to talk about it, because you're going to be judged right away on being too emotional. To me, you are never too emotional, whether you're a man or a woman. Whatever is on your mind is on your mind, and you should express it to a man or a woman, you know? And like, there's a lot of my friends through work that have situations, and they don't want to talk about it because it makes them look weak. And I'm like, no, you should talk about it. It will make you stronger. You know, and I was saying to you earlier, you know, this is what we were discussing there. Yeah, I wish there were places where you could go without judgment. Definitely, I know there's places online, but to me, there are definitely a lot of women crisis centers more than men, just because. Because
of the numbers, I think, because of the statistics.
And, yeah, exactly. And I just wish there was more. I wish there was more I could do to help guys that suffer. I spoke with you also about there are a few guys that I knew that committed suicide, and it was awful just to see it because of a divorce. And really, they probably just could have talked to a therapist or to somebody as my son. You know, I think I talk pretty well to guys about situations that they're going through. And I wish I could have saved these gentlemen. They were just too far gone. But if I had a place, I think they wouldn't have been so far gone. You know, like something to talk to. Like they could have been saved. Because like many a times I was myself, I was like ready to lose it. But I don't know. I just had an inner strength to like say, look, you have to step back, take a breath, and realize that you are going to be eventually on top one day and overcome this abuse. And I thought I was reaching a couple, but yeah, just tragically, one overdosed and then one hung himself. And it's hard to just see that happen and not to hear the whole story of what was going on, and, you know, before they reached that point. So, yeah, I would like to form an organization where men can just go rather than, you know, like when they're at that point of they don't know where to turn or there's just too much overwhelming struggle that you don't think you can go anywhere but to another, you know, place. It's hard, you know. It's hard to see these things happen to men that you know are hard workers, take care of their children. And that's pretty much all I don't speak for all men, but that's pretty much what men try to achieve, is just to have a family, a great job, which you like, you know, because some men just do it to take care of that family, and they don't even have any ambition to be at that job. Like there's so many guys that I work with and they're just like, I hate this place. And I'm just like, well, you have the right to leave. You know, you have the right to make yourself happy. So yeah, I wish there were just more organizations that could help men out in situations like this, so things like that won't happen.
Well, I think that's pretty awesome. I mean, if you wanted to put together some sort of meetup or, I mean, not you, if that was something you couldn't do, but, you know, some sort of place where men could get together and talk and not have to worry about emotions being a bad thing. And I mean, like you said, you do have to evolve in order to be at that space. But I think when people are going through something as hard as, like you said, divorce seems to have been what triggered some of the suicides that you happened to witness, you know, maybe they would have somebody to speak to a little bit more. Because I really didn't find a lot looking online. I found some really great stuff in the UK, but yeah, even for like chat groups and stuff, I was having a hard time finding them for guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of men, I didn't really do a statistic check, but they tend to self-medicate to get rid of the pain, and just probably way too much self-medicating, you know, and some of that just leads to other situations, you know, like that's when your anger gets triggered, you know, you drink, your anger gets triggered, then you find yourself in jail and you don't want to be there, and then you can't get out of situations because, I mean, you can't bail yourself out. And you really, and then you, you know, people start to look at you like we were saying in the beginning of the show, that you have a problem. You have an anger issue, when really it's just frustration because you can't talk about the things that are on your mind. You're emotionally just destroyed. So, yeah, I'm not going to say that I have not been to jail. I have been to jail for, you know, losing my temper, because I'm just so frustrated with where I'm at emotionally, you know, and I'm just like, you know, go ahead, take me. I'll spend the night there, because I'd rather be there thinking about my thoughts than be in the house that's toxic, You know what I mean? Just two people are toxic, it just doesn't work in the household and it destroys the family. You know what I mean? Like, so I can't say that I have not been, had anger issues, because I have, you know what I mean? But you have to talk to somebody to get over some of these issues.
I think this is actually an amazing demonstration of what it probably feels like to be a man in today's society and today's world. I mean, Me Too is literally every other person as well, you could call it. Everybody has been, if you look at the statistics, I'm not great at math. What I'm trying to say is, in the very beginning of this show, the first thing you started talking about is your religion. You grew up Catholic. Of course, you wanted to talk about at least, at very least, whether or not you wanted to have the children. You wanted to have, I mean, because I know that the Catholic religion is quite against abortion, and yet, and that's a very touchy subject, especially in a world where, you know, people are buying T-shirts that say, thank God for abortion, right? I mean, yeah. That it's a very, you know, you want to have your beliefs and your sacred, keep things that are sacred to you. And you've been a good father. You care about your children. You want them to be vaccinated. You're not poisoning them. You know that when you take them to the doctor that you're doing the right thing. You also said you're a welder. That means you're an artist. You're a sensitive person. You work with, you know, materials. You want to create things. I was like your friend before my mic cut out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm listening to you and I'm feeling you. I had no idea you were an African American. Yesterday I was walking in the street and I heard that song by Sean Paul, the one that's like, sexy ladies want to get with us. They want to be with us. They want to pop it off. And I just assumed, oh, well, he's black or whatever. And like, I wanted to look up his origins. He's Jamaican. He's actually part Jewish and part Chinese. Okay? So, like, I don't look at race, because I know that a lot of people are angry, you know, because of COVID, you know, we can't sit together. Or because of COVID, my wife won't let me vaccinate my kids, and I know what's right for my own kids. And she wouldn't have even had the kids if it weren't for me and my religion. And there's all this stuff that I wanted to say along the line, but then I got all upset. Okay, so now I want to talk about the emotional part. That is not a male-female thing. It's just how we're socialized to deal with our emotions. It's like you're supposed, a guy goes to work and is some kind of sissy or something because he's not being the tough guy, and you know, or he's pulling you aside and saying, hey, let's smoke some ganja. And like, if you have an excuse that's like kind of tough guy, to go to the side and have the little water cooler talk, which is what the women do. These are all stereotypes. You are not a stereotype. Look at you. You were a circle with Lady Di around you. I mean, I had no idea who you were. I knew a little bit about your situation, that you were an abused man. And I was very, very anxious to hear what that means, especially since I just divorced a man. And there was so much pressure on me to be the one that didn't screw it up for him, because he was abused by every other woman that he'd been with. And I was like, I'm going to make it perfect for him. Right. I'm going to be Donna Reed in the 2021 version, and I'm going to learn how to cook something, even if I just cheat and heat it up. I'm going to be great. Anyway, and my point is, that was a stereotype. All of a sudden, I'm a mother of five, because he was Irish. He also was a Roman Catholic raised.
Right.
And so, and he loves his children so much. And they were all teenagers when I got there. And you know what that means. And I didn't, okay? Because I'm like you. You're a welder. I'm a rock star. Same thing. It's like we want to be young and at heart, and we want to create. We want to make the world a youthful, fun place to be for everyone involved. And I don't know who invented adulthood, but I'd like to just sort of like make my mic cancel out on that word, because it's kind of BS. It's like, oh, all of a sudden you better hurry up and be an adult and just grow up. What is that supposed to mean? You grow up. Why don't you just, you described it. It's like you did something and then all of a sudden you were in jail for it. What was it? What was your crime?
Accused of domestic violence. Never, and I swear on my life, touched anyone. But, you know, like, because I got angry and slammed a cell phone, that was like a open invite to call the cops. And, you know, like, I think I that particular time, I just went out on the step and I was like, you know, because it was like constant calls, like, all throughout my job, and I just couldn't handle like so many calls. And I'm like, you know, why can't I just deal with it when I get home? Like, you're kind of putting me at risk with my job because we're actually not allowed to receive calls during the job, you know? So I was just fed up with getting calls. So I was like, you know, you can't use this phone if I just throw it. So yeah, I was like, you know, I stood outside and then they arrested me and they're like, you know, because I actually got charged with two crimes because I, you know, the domestic violence, and then I didn't believe that she had called the cops. So I picked up the phone call. So then I got another charge of tampering with a call. So yeah, I mean, one of my friends came the next day and bailed me out and then I went right back to work. So I like sit in court with my uniform on.
Well,
I'm gonna go back to work. But yeah, there was no physical violence towards her. You know what I mean?
And that's a dangerous slope. I mean, for men, I think that's an added thing, right? Because if you do something that is explosive, which most people do, right? So right. If someone's pushing you, like your brother or someone's like poking you, eventually you turn around and you're like, stop it, right? Yeah. And you're like, cut it out. And that's usually, that was what you were doing, right? Usually when us as women do it, that's like, oh, she's crazy. She like smashed a glass or she like took her favorite thing and ripped it apart because you couldn't take it anymore with this person, like constantly poking at you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an added thing that maybe not all women think about is that, yes, if you get that turned around on you and you're called the abuser and you get put in jail for your reactions, now you have to even watch yourself even more, right? So, and yeah, then that threat is even more there.
Yeah. And then I had to sit there 26 weeks of, and I had to work around things, 26 weeks of family violence to, get the whole case nollied and actually to, I mean, yes, I wanted to have therapy, you know, generally, but like that was like a therapy class. And it was crazy to see how many men actually were narcissists and abusing. And like, I didn't even know the first week sitting there in class what to write because I hadn't abused anyone, but I knew I would not pass the class unless I started writing. I kind of had to admit to it in order to pass the class because the therapist was looking at me like, he's not writing anything. He must not want to participate in this. So I had to kind of like make up a story on how I was abusive just to get through that class, or they could have failed me in that class and made me do the whole 26 weeks all over again. But I mean, there were crazy people in that class. There was somebody that actually, we didn't see him for 3 days and we're like, where did this guy go? And he actually killed someone, like a guy out in another state. And I was like, holy cow. Like I would just sit there and like have to go into another room. You know, we got a break during these classes and breathe and be like, you know, like these men are abusive. I'm around, you know, like some of them will get help. And ultimately, some of them will go and abuse women some more. You know what I mean? And to see like a bunch of men abusing women, and you have no control of getting out of that class. It was tough, but I just like got through it and wished everybody well. Like some guys, like you really got through to them, like maybe you shouldn't be this way. Like I kind of, that was like one of the classes where I like saw like maybe I can help some of these guys and talk to them and maybe change the way they were, because some of them were abusive, you know what I mean? Like it was been a roller coaster of like just seeing the different types of control and abusiveness people have being a man. And like, yeah, I would love to help just men in general and women, you know what I mean? Like I won't stereotype or single anyone out that is being abused, you know, by a narcissist.
This website that I stumbled upon called Victims of Narcissism. Okay. I am that. I am the embodiment of this thing. That's why I'm always like, ooh, can I tiptoe and say boo-boo-doo-boo-doo? Like, that is why. And I want to just, like, now calmly and in a lovely face discuss what is normal and what is cause and effect. She made me hit her. She pissed me off. Or he made me break my favorite thing. He did it to me. And I know for a fact that the person for which this show Skeleton Shelter is named, it started with a pencil. Okay? Yeah, he flipped a pencil at her and it hit her a little too hard. She started to bleed. And she got angry. So she said, hey, don't throw a pencil. And then that turned into an unbelievably scary cycle of abuse that just never, it would have never ended. She would have died. And, you know, you strike me as someone who got caught in a system that didn't take the time to find out about cause, your cause. What caused you to be there? You had to make up a story just to, like, it's kind of like school. Why am I here? I'm not going to use this in my life. But if right. they said, hey, this is what life is about, and they cut to the end, you're going to die and you need a job, so get in your real estate, pretend to be a man, pretend mm-hmm. to grow up, and then come home and hug your teddy bear and be a real man. I mean, that's just an example, Princess Di. I'm not talking about you specifically.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, men, women, we're all just people. I mean, that's all I want to say. But I got really angry just today, right now, in front of all you people in TV land. But because I felt choked, I felt like I couldn't express what I wanted to say to today's guest, who happens to be a man. Yeah. You know, he loves his kids. That makes a man love your kids. That makes to me a man. I mean, there's people who abuse their kids. They could be either sex, you know. And kids abuse each other. We all, it's a systemic societal problem. It's not male, female.
Yes, definitely. And we need to help everybody. There needs to be resources for everyone. And there needs to be mostly more resources for people who identify as men. I mean, because also, you know, we're talking about everyone in between, everybody who identifies as whatever gender that they do, that everybody should have resources. You shouldn't have to look all night long and all day long to find a safe place to go. You know, like there should be somewhere that you can go to get safety if you're in one of those, you know, situations.
I agree. I'm not sure. Is my mic still? Yeah, my mic's
still. Yes.
Yeah, there definitely should be. And hopefully I can start something one day. Well, I know I can start something. It's just taking the time to do so, which I will probably do that.
That would be really inspiring. And if you do, you can come back on and you can talk about it and we'll like give all the information. We do have another guest that'll be coming on in at another time. That's another guy that's going to talk about his experience and what he's gone through. So, maybe when we do that, we can have you back on and you can discuss that. Like, it would be nice to hear two guys discussing, that situation and what maybe he thinks that is needed as well.
Definitely. Yeah, I would love to hear another voice and hear what they go through and how they deal with it. Because, it's tough. And it took a lot for me to get through it. And it still continues. But, I know that I'm in a better place right now with it all. So little by little, it never goes away. It will never go away. You get scarred from it. And you just have to take that and try to work with it and make your life better somehow still,
Yeah. Use it as a tool, right? To get to the next step. Yeah. So I know that Patty is going to play a song for us today, and she has something also to tell us first. But we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks, that something different about our podcast is we would like to do some live music for you. And, some of these songs are therapeutic to us. Some of these songs are songs we wrote. But I'm going to give the mic over to Patty for a minute.
Go ahead. Thank you, Jen. And thank you very much, Princess Di, who is an anonymous statue.
Mr. C.
I respect your real name, Mr. C. Okay, so this story is about a guy who tried to seduce me. He will lie and say he was just hanging out playing records, but no. So the song is by David Gates, who was in a band called Bread. And it's like a super sweet, like all the songs are very sweet and like 70s, airy-fairy kind of thing. And he said, hey, have you ever heard the song Diary? It's the ultimate narcissist song. If anyone knows it, it's about a guy who finds his girlfriend's diary and he starts reading all about himself and how she's finally found the love of her life. Then she reads on, or he reads on, and finds out that it's actually not even about the narcissist person that's reading the diary, who he shouldn't be reading in the first place, but it's about someone else that she's in love with, and he gets his heart smushed. So I wrote a song about this guy who smushed my heart, but I'm totally over it. It's called Where Were You? I thought you were
Awesome. That was great.
Yeah, that was awesome. I think my mic was muted for a minute.
Yeah, we muted our mics for a second to make sure you didn't have any feedback. We were giving you the full stage.
Sometimes you have a tantrum, you get results.
Well, I mean, okay.
And other times, you have to figure this out.
So I want to thank you so much, Mr. C, for coming on. And, you know, if there's anything that you want to give us an update on, or if there's anything that you would like us to cover as far as, you know, from the male side of things, it would be interesting to keep in touch about those things. And I want to thank you so much for coming on and telling your story. I know it wasn't easy to find time without the kids and, you know, to kind of sneak off. So I appreciate it. And I hope you have a great rest of your night.
Make you break down.